say it out loud.
Imprint.
Welcome to Imprint episode 64. It has been a while since we've last spoken with you. In fact, it's probably been over a year. And shockingly, two Twilight films came out, and we all just discovered this news recently. So we all checked them out.
We just discovered that came out?
And what? Is that not funny? It was just a joke.
Oh, yeah, it was hilarious.
Okay. Sorry. I'm a bit rusty. Bit rusty, folks. But, you know, this is really nice. We have everybody here who has been a regular host on the show. We have me, Andy. Then we have Matt.
Maddie.
And then four women whose names all end in A. Laura Elise Andre and Pamela. So it's good to talk to everybody.
Yeah. I love how you bunched all the women together because, you probably can't even tell the difference
intro.
Between their voices.
Yeah, but isn't this nice, guys, how we've all gathered for one final imprint? We also shocked people when we said on Twitter, we're recording our we haven't spoken to you in a year and a half, but we're about to do the last imprint.
Well, I'll be honest, I don't remember who any of you people are, so.
Yeah, well, if it makes you feel any better, we don't remember you either.
I figured. So. No hard feelings.
It's okay, guys. Okay, though, for the listeners, if you forgot that this show existed, because so did we.
but we honestly, I don't know why we didn't do a show after Breaking Dawn Part 1 came out.
I thought we did.
Did we?
No, we didn't,
too.
But I thought we did.
I guess time just slipped by and we just assumed we had done one. And
We did.
No,
have,
I think we did.
We did.
We had a doc going and everything.
No, we did. I see it.
Yeah. We just didn't do DVD reviews.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever. But
right.
Who needs those anyway? I mean, there's nothing in there.
It was like a year ago now, I think. Like almost to the day, I think.
Yeah. It says November 27th, 2011.
You know, we didn't have the Republican nominee at that point. It's been a long time.
That is the standard bearer.
Right.
I too measure the calendar year by the primary season.
Yeah. It's been a long time.
It has, but we are back for one last hurrah, and we will, you know, kind of have, we'll try to do some sort of farewell thing towards the end of the podcast. I'd like to think that this Twilight podcast has always been so great because we don't take it too seriously. We have fun with it. And that's always been something that's...
How well said. Very well said.
What? No, I'm serious, though. If you listen to other Twilight podcasts, they take the books and films from a much more serious perspective. And I think, to the best of my knowledge, they are all female podcasts. What Matt and I delivered to the Twilight podcasting realm is truly spectacular.
It's male genitalia that this environment needs.
So oh my God, course. The testosterone. That made a difference.
But we are going to start the show by discussing Breaking Dawn Part 2, offering our review of the final film in the Twilight series.
Our review, meaning the only review that matters.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start with general thoughts first. Matt, well, let's start with you. Have you seen it a couple times now?
I've seen it twice now.
Okay, and what have you thought?
And I paid to see it, guys.
Wow.
I loved it. Honestly, it was really great. Kind of slow in some parts, but the very end really, really just... Oh,
great.
God,
it was great.
It was great. I mean, it was kind of slow in some parts, but...
Are you serious?
Yeah.
See, I actually liked it because compared to part one, I thought it moved a lot better.
I think in part one, it was a steady pace. It was all slow. But in this one, it was good. I really enjoyed Kristen Stewart as a vampire. She definitely was the kind of person I think we all wanted her to be like when she was human. But we finally got to see her, you know, loosen up, not stutter at least once. And, you know, she didn't have to blink anymore. So we never saw her blink. because she was dead. And I love the deaths. The deaths were great, especially because they didn't happen.
Well, we'll talk about that at
yeah.
At
so
length
yeah. So 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 generally, I'm sorry. I'm going into a bit. So I generally enjoyed the film.
How about you, Elisa? You're fresh off seeing it. You're seeing it. You just got back from the theater, and you emailed us all in a tizzy over the end.
I did. I was completely losing it. I'm still recovering, to be honest with you. I was not anticipating that. I heard that there was a twist at the end. That is not the twist that I had in mind. You know, genocide was not really what I was thinking was going to end with the Twilight series. You know, so somehow this just went like Hotel Rwanda on everyone at the last second, and very disconcerting. But I have to say, it was a stroke of genius. It was really, really brilliant. I'm not sure how it would have worked otherwise without that. I think it kept the pace pitch perfect, and it really, awesome. I don't know, I hate to say it, but I almost feel like that's how the book should have been.
Mm. I think let's just...
a rare instance of the movie exceeding the book in some way.
Let's just talk about that, since that's really the
scene that should have been in the book. Well, this was the scene that we all wanted.
Yeah. Andrea and Pamela and Laura, was it what you expected? Like Elisa said, she didn't expect this kind of scene. Was it something that you guys expected? Because in the trailer, we saw this battle brewing and them running at each other. Is this what you thought was going to happen?
No. And I'll be perfectly honest. I have not kept up with any of the movie news. Like, I went into this not, like, I'm sorry, I'm a bad person, but I went into this knowing nothing, like nothing. So I was expecting, oh, you know, they're probably going to like run around and like, you know, throw each other in the air and crap. But, and then there came that one point where, Carlisle very sadly bit the dust. And if it were true that I lived in a foreign country where this movie was not in theaters yet, I would have had to rewind the movie that I was watching on the internet because I was so shocked. I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that is amazing.
Well, I went to see it with my mom, and who was pretending like she didn't care. She was like, oh, I'm only here to see it, you know, because you want it come. And she gasped as if, like, someone had beheaded me. And the whole theater was pretty much going insane. But, yeah, I didn't expect that, though I kind of did get spoiled on a bit of the twist, but
yeah, I'm kind of envious of Laura. She didn't get to see anything. I would have loved to have been completely shocked.
I actually didn't really see very much either, though, because I just kind of Twilight was something I put on the back burner for a while. Yeah. So well, it was a
well,
huge
I mean, you
shock
at least
to me.
You saw the trailers at least, right?
Well, kind of. I saw a trailer,
In theaters in the past, like 4 or 5 months, you've
seen
the trailer.
Yeah, but there's not that much. I mean, you see Bella do this weird roundhouse kick, and that's pretty much it. Like, as far as the battle scene, like, they didn't really give anything away about who was going to die or
well,
anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
We didn't know that heads were, like, literally going to start rolling. Like,
but you knew there was going to be a final battle scene because, would Edward give, you know, throw Bella
no,
a turnabout
of,
unless
of course,
they were
yeah.
having sex or something?
But some kinky sex right there. But yeah, no, just like the way that they were able to cover up just how big of a bloodbath it was going to be was, I think, incredible because I went to see it the first night and I didn't know any of that was going to go down.
Yeah.
And that whole entire audience didn't know either. I mean, everybody was like screaming and gasping. And there was a point there where I was not sure if this was actually going to fix itself. So,
It was clear to me that there was going to be a battle, but the only thing I was unsure of was whether it was going to be Alice's vision or it was actually going to happen. So I went into it with a lot of anticipation, like, wow, are they actually going to do this? And when you're watching the scene, you're like, oh my God, is this really happening or what? And I mean, my audience and myself were enthralled in what was happening on screen. And I was so happy because I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Mm-hmm. Because they needed a big bang finish.
Yeah.
We all knew the book wasn't going to work, and as an ending on screen, and they pulled it off tremendously.
Yeah. I was really enthralled with the fight too.
Yeah,
like you didn't know who was gonna bite the dust or not. So this was like the first time we can experience something from a Twilight film that we didn't know about, like anything, really. Mm-hmm. Like, no, sorry, have we seen the entire movie? Is everyone up to date with everything, Laura? Laura.
Check Skype. Laura may have disappeared.
How can I check Skype? This is your computer.
She's not talking.
Oh.
Laura.
She's still there.
Laura. Did Laura faint?
I think she died.
Did Laura die too?
Did Laura get killed?
God, I hope this is just a vision. Let's see. What else is there to talk about this? Oh, I wanted to know if Stephanie, I want to know how they picked the characters that were killed. I think it'd be really cool if it was Stephanie's exact decisions. Like, okay, if I had actually written a battle in the book, here's who would have died. So let's make these people die in the film. But nobody got to ask her that because they didn't want to spoil the big end scene. So do you guys think this was in Stephanie's, this was Stephanie's doing, the exact people who died?
She has. I mean, she talked about how she didn't include a real battle in the books because she knew that a lot of people would die, right? So, I mean, I'm thinking she probably did know who would have died if it had happened.
Perhaps.
And she did write off on this, right? So,
yeah.
I think she definitely had a hand in debating. Hold on. Laura said that she can't hear very well, so we have to call her back.
Okay.
So how do I do? So I just hang up and then call her again?
Just drag her name back into the thing. I can do it in a second. For anyone, okay. Well, while Laura's off, we're just gonna say that Laura thinks that they actually died. So we are pulling one last giant imprint prank. We did the Bella Stowe was on IMDb and stuff like that. So our final imprint prank is making Laura believe through this entire podcast that these characters actually died.
Nice. Okay.
So that's why we're like going around the this
was obfuscating.
Yeah, this was Elisa's idea. I was like, we should tell her, and Elisa's like, no,
how dare you?
how dare you be honest?
She's like, are you crazy?
Who does that?
In the battle, I personally loved Arrow's laugh, and I see somebody else made the note, but I had included this in my review, so I'm taking credit for this as well. His character is so wicked in this film, and it is kind of like a Voldemort touch. Who put this in the notes?
I did. He did like the weird, kind of like weird, it's creepy, and I guess it kind of works, but it just reminded me of Ray Fiennes' version.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense because Arrow's really old, so he probably doesn't laugh very often. So when it does, it just comes off as like he doesn't really know how to laugh.
Have you dissected this?
No.
Well,
Andrew, do you have
this is obvious information, Elisa.
You know what? I don't right now. But Michael Sheen, in an interview about the character and how he played this, this creepy kind of, with the voice that matches and whatnot, he said that a vampire who's been around as long as Arrow, he needs to find new ways to entertain himself and have fun. So that was Michael Sheen's thought process into creating that kind of wild, creepy voice and attitude. He just thought Arrow would want to have some fun after all this time, and really, really loves these kinds of moments when he gets to really flaunt his power. I thought that was some pretty interesting analysis from Michael Sheen.
Yes,
who's really one of the best actors in the series, right? I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Most acclaimed anyway. I would think.
Yeah,
and that's saying something.
I love how he played him really unstable, though. That was kind of cool because he's a little more stoic the first time we meet him, mm-hmm. and so it was kind of interesting to see him like ridiculously off his hinges.
Yeah, he smiled way too. I mean, yeah. It was like crazy smiles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like almost like Mad Hatter, like you know what I mean?
Yeah. Crazy.
Let's talk about. Well, let's jump back now to the beginning of the film where we see Bella transform into a vampire. There was a really good scene, I thought,
Yeah.
Where she's learning how to be human, how the Coens are all teaching her. And these are the types of things like, oh, this is another thing we have to talk about. If the film, if the story overall did have to be split into two, but we'll talk about that later on.
Did you think it was kind of, I thought it was kind of not off-putting, but kind of weird that immediately after the opening credits and when Bella wakes up as a newborn vampire, they just cut right into a song.
Like when a montage sort
like a song where she's looking through the vampire's eyes for the first time, and it's like they're playing this kind of hipster song. It kind of
indie pop.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. That didn't really bother me very much, but I liked that they included all those little things, and it was cool to see how they thought that it would look through a vampire's eyes, because that's something that you don't really know if it's going to translate well on screen, because it's something that's so descriptive that you could imagine seeing it in a book.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see, like, just like even like the dust particles or how she sees a plank of wood or something like that.
Yeah. How she can choose to zoom in.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Was anybody kind of waiting for her to, like, doesn't she almost attack Edward in the books because she doesn't remember who he is for like 2 seconds?
Yeah,
was anybody kind of waiting for that to happen?
That would have been a good moment.
Yeah,
I was waiting for it, like, as soon as she kind of was in arm's reach, but they bypassed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of the opening sequence, the opening credits, I did not like that. It went on way too long, and I thought that
I agree.
That was because they split it into two films, and they needed something to fill time. It was way too long.
It was long, but I mean, it was kind of cool because, you know, it showed the venom, the blood turning into venom and all that. I mean, yeah. I thought it was, and also, like, it kind of looked like sunrise in a sense at one point. So, you know, breaking dawn. So, I mean, it made sense to me, but yeah, it was definitely.
I really liked it. Honestly, I thought it was very well done. And I thought it was a great opening. However,
yeah, I actually really liked it too.
I do not think they should have done it for both the opening and the ending credits.
Right.
I thought that was too much. Like, pick and choose. Mm-hmm. Either open with a really long montage or close with a really long montage. But they kind of did both. And it was just too much.
The closing montage, I thought, was better than the beginning thing. Because it was really a tribute to all the characters. Because some of those characters that they showed weren't even in that film. So it wasn't like traditional credits. It was sort of just like a proper send-off for all these actors. I was hoping to see the original Victoria.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, what was that?
They did have her, though, didn't she?
No.
They had both? Because I thought they had the three.
No, I think they did with Cam Gigande and...
Yeah, I thought they grouped them together.
Yeah, they grouped the three nomads together.
But they didn't show her name. So that was kind of burn.
Oh, damn.
Did they not show her name?
I don't think they did.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
Ooh, yeah, I think they just showed Bryce Dallas Howard's.
Oof. But they did, but you're saying they did show a shot of the of Rachel Lefebvre.
Yeah, I remember seeing her grouped
they
with
did
the
show,
other.
Yeah, they did show the three nomads together with Eddie Gathegi and
yeah.
Okay.
Well, that sucks.
Like, I enjoyed the opening sequence for the first couple minutes. Then it was just like, okay, time to end this.
Yeah, I know.
Let's progress now. How about Renesmee? This is another thing we see towards the beginning of the film.
Ooh.
Why? What didn't you do? Go ahead,
Laura. Thought the CGI was super creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, her face really freaked me out.
Mm-hmm. She wasn't proportionate.
Yeah,
like
she wasn't.
Different. It was just weird. Yeah. And I remember, I think it was Kristen Stewart who talked about having to carry this. I don't know if it was like a little robot or something that was creepy, but I didn't think the CGI version was much like any less creepy, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they really tried. They tried a lot and they put a lot of money into getting Renesmee looking
fake.
Human, but there it was just, yeah, I know. It was, they were screwed from the beginning. It really is kind of impossible to make a good CGI Renesmee. As but a baby.
Isn't it what some people were comparing it to, like a reverse Benjamin Button? And I haven't seen Benjamin Button, but I assume it's not shitty like Renesmee.
No, that was actually
sorry, I shouldn't have cursed.
Stuff.
Why did I? Sorry, I apologize.
It's all right. Oh, you can apologize
it's
the next episode.
What loose? What are they going
to
do?
But
break out the tequila.
I didn't even mean that, though. I didn't even mean that bad of it. It just, like Matt said, it just looked strange. And speaking of special effects, there were way too many scenes where it was blatantly obvious that the characters were standing in front of a green screen.
Yeah. 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 I noticed that too.
Like, what is with that?
They had to stay true to Twilight, though. I mean, that's kind of been the norm.
Well, no. You mean low budget?
Yeah. They had to stay true to Twilight.
It's honestly what it was. It's just low budget.
I didn't read anything about a green screen in the books. Oh, well.
Okay, so, but Renesmee, how about the actress, Mackenzie Foy, when you do see her actually acting? She didn't have many lines, but I thought she really did make for a great Renesmee.
She did look a great comparison between Kristen and Rob. When did we actually see her?
Well, right when Alice, sees the Volturi coming to inspect Renesmee when they're over the piano.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
But there must have been another couple.
She was in the tent and when she was asleep saying that, did Alice leave because we're going to die?
And when she meets Charlie too. That was another one for Christmas.
Well, she met Charlie when she was an infant.
No. When, the Christmas scene.
Right.
That was when she was full grown, quote unquote, regular. But how about you ladies? What do you think of Renesmee overall? I mean, did it live up to, like, when you were reading the book, I don't know if you, did it live up to the expectation set in your head from reading the book 4 years ago?
When I read the book, I was kind of always sort of on the fence about the whole Renesmee concept to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't say that it didn't live up to my expectations, but she was really cute. I mean, like, the kid was adorable.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, she, you know,
I can see
the very few lines she did have, she delivered them mm-hmm. as well as you could expect a small child to do, I think.
Yeah. In the book, she grew on me, and I think she did in the movie as well, especially when she is actually herself, like when she, what's her name? Mackenzie Foy, is that her name?
Yeah.
You know, when we actually saw her, I thought she did great.
I can see what Jacob sees in her.
What did you guys think of that, though? Was it creepy at all?
No. I did like the scene when Bella realizes that Jacob imprints on Renesmee.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
Because I was like, hit him again.
And Edward's just like, no way.
I felt like that was actually kind of a reflection of how a lot of people reacted when they read the book. Like, what the hell?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Elisa have like a major panic attack over
her life? Her world crumbled when she realized that Jacob imprinted on Renesmee.
I'm going to be paying the therapist bill for the next 10 years after that moment. It was okay. I mean, I thought that he did a good job with the movie. The only thing that was a little creepy was the end where I think Jake says to Edward, "So should I call you dad now?" No, you shouldn't. Way too early. Way too early for that, Jake.
That was pretty cool.
I mean, I think Jake was just awkward through the whole movie. I mean, he did strip in front of Charlie too.
Oh, that scene was hilarious.
That scene was crazy.
And like that, and Billy Burke is such a great actor. And just like he always brings such great scenes to the Twilight saga consistently through all five films.
Yeah. He's always like the voice of reason or something. So when like Jacob was starting to strip, Charlie was going, "What the hell are you doing? Are you, sir, you do know this is not normal."
Moving along. Mm-hmm. We, who put this next one in? Why don't you talk about that? Whoever put that in.
I did. Yeah, it was just, there's this really weird glowy thing that Bella does apparently now whenever her and Edward have sex. And it was just so weird. Like, I didn't get it.
Well, refresh my memory. When they were having sex, Bella was glittering?
Well, when two vampires love each other as much as they do.
Yeah, go on.
They get intimate and they make pixie dust.
Monsters.
That is exactly what it looked like.
It looked like Tinkerbell was shaken all over Bella.
Yeah, it's true. At first I thought, okay, maybe this is like her shield, kind of. It's she's losing control a little.
Yeah.
But they didn't make reference to that again, so apparently not.
Mm.
Well, from the looks of it, it was very nice. It was a nice glitter.
I'm going to pretend like it's that, Andrea, because that sounds like a better explanation than just
after they were done okay. And they went back into the Cullen house, Alice walks up to Bella and goes, "So did you glitter?"
Well, somebody brought up to me that that was the only time there was any sparkling or glittering. Like, where was that elsewhere in the film, you know?
There's a scene where Bella is, like, she goes out in the sunlight just to watch herself glitter.
Right, but there wasn't much more. You know, remember how it was, like, such a big deal earlier on in the films?
I think because they just realized that it was such a bad special effect that they should keep it to a minimum.
So. Go ahead, Laura. Laura?
Oh, I was just going to say, at least for me, when she walked out, it was like she was glowing. I don't know.
Nice. Did you glitter?
Laura, say that again.
What?
Say that again. You broke up for a second. Just say it again.
Okay. No, I was saying when she walked out into the sunlight that time that we were talking about, when she walked out to, like, I guess, watch her skin glitter, it didn't look like she was glittering. It was just like an overall glow, at least from what I could see on my very poor quality.
It was a faint echo of what Edward glittered in Twilight, in the original one. Like, you didn't even see her glitter very hard.
I just think they never mastered the glitter in the sun thing.
Yeah.
Or the running, really, for that matter.
How
hard is that really to do, though? I mean, like, I'm not a special effects person, but I'm pretty sure you could just, like, powder them with actual glitter and it would probably look better than
Okay, Pam, do you remember in X-Men First Class, the one mutant who turned into crystal diamonds?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they should have looked like.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would have been better. Yeah.
So there you go.
It just looks like they're sweating.
Yeah, it just,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, they've never gotten the glitter down right, unfortunately. But that's okay. We accept what it was. How about the new vampires? The big aspect of this new film, and one of the reasons I thought this film moved so nicely, was that we saw the Cullens going from coven to coven all around the world, meeting these new people. And I thought that kept the pacing of the film moving very well.
Okay, I'm going to say something, and I'm probably going to get a lot of flack for this. And I'm sorry, but I'm really curious about it. Isn't like the whole point of one of the biggest aspects of being a vampire is that you are a very attractively drawn, like you're hot
Uh-oh.
As hell. And a lot of the new vampires, I gotta say, were good looking actors, of course, but. Like, vampires are supposed to be, like, captivating and sexy, like supermodels looking people when they turn. And some of them were not.
Like who? Name a couple.
The Egyptian coven was not, like hardcore sexy. Like, I would not have been drawn to any of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Irish coven, I gotta say. Help me out here. Who else was there?
But I thought they were all attractive. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, you're lying.
No, I do know what I do know what you're lying. I do know what you're talking about. And there was actually one in particular that I thought was just so like it was like the makeup looked bad or something was really off about him. I don't know what it was. But yeah, I kind of see what you're saying, but I guess their argument would be, well, these are from foreign countries, so the vampires. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I guess you have to ask, is what defines beauty? Like,
no, we're not getting into that.
Like, did you notice any blemishes on them that was bothering you? Any zits? Like what made them not attractive? Just because you wouldn't hook up with them doesn't mean they're not attractive. You know what I mean?
No, I don't know. I don't know what you mean at all. If I'm not attracted to them, no. I mean, look at the Denali clan, the Cullen clan, like they were hot ass mofos.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
All right. I'm just saying, like Bryce Dallas Howard, Mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm. Cam Gigande, Eddie.
But you're naming all Americans.
No, they're not all Americans, are they?
I don't know. I think that would be their argument. Like, oh, these are foreigners, so they don't look hot like Americans would look hot. I don't know.
It doesn't matter what, like, the society treats them as hot. They're supposed to be like
failing.
Perfect physical look. I didn't want it to go this far. I just wanted to say that. I'm gonna get so much crap for this now.
It's okay. It's the last episode. You can say whatever you want.
No, please
yeah,
don't.
But there are social media outlets that people can write to me.
Elisa, you have your finger on, you know, sex appeal and whatnot. I know you always pick the best people. What do you agree with what Matt's saying? Are they not, or should they have been more attractive?
Joke.
Elisa, throw me a boon.
Oh God. You know, I honestly, that didn't even cross my mind while I was watching it. Matt says so and he says so. That's fine.
Okay.
It didn't cross my mind when I was watching it. I thought that the vampires looked fine to me, but that being said, I wasn't actively having that thought. In retrospect, I didn't understand what he's saying. And not from a subjective standpoint, but I get that, for instance, like the Egyptian vampires, they just look kind of, I don't know, like the weird face stuff that was going on and the outfits and what have you just was not attractive. But I really think that it's such a minor thing in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. So moving on from there, somebody did want to talk about Garrett.
I just thought he was the best one, the best new vampire. Yeah. I found his war stories hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And, the whole redcoats are coming. I mean, he was my favorite new one in the books as well. And I just thought he did a great job
mm-hmm.
in the movie.
He had a lot of fun with the character.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to try to find, there was one other, the blind.
Oh, Alistair.
No, I'm thinking of a girl.
The one who shocked people?
Yes. She was really good. She was one of my favorites.
Yeah, her hairstyle I didn't really like, but she
not
was really
Irina,
good.
But,
love God.
No,
yeah, she's one of the Denalis, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Overall, I enjoyed all of this.
Kate, right? Kate, yeah.
Kate. Yes,
oh, yes
you are exactly right. Casey LeBow. LeBow. She was one of my favorites in the covens mm-hmm. overall. And we saw her in part one as well. A little foreshadowing about what was going to be happening.
Who was the English vampire, Alistair?
Mm-hmm.
What was his point?
Just to be the antisocial vampire.
Just to be the antisocial.
The emo one, yeah.
The little bitch.
I want to say that he had a bigger role in the book.
Yeah, I think a bigger book. He had a bigger role in the book too, yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like they kind of tried to give him a purpose in the movie, but it didn't really come off very well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I liked him. He got a lot of screen time. And
yeah, he did.
For as small as of a role they really gave him, he did have a lot of screen time, yeah.
And he did have a good accent, and I thought his character was actually pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I did like him.
What'd you guys think of the, what was it, the Romanian vampires?
Which ones were they?
They were like the really tiny blonde guy.
Yeah,
they were okay. The only scene I really kind of liked them in was just the one scene when, I forgot his name. When one of the Romanian vampires said, well, that didn't take much.
Vladimir?
Yeah, Vladimir.
Noel Fisher.
Noel Fisher, right.
He seems like a cool guy. Yeah, that was funny, right? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was funny at all.
It's just a big, big cast. I'm looking at the cast list for Renesmee. There are actually different girls who played Renesmee. There's 9 of them here.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was
really
strange. Yeah, because I thought the special reverse special effects were supposed to be Mackenzie Foy, but apparently not.
Well, going back to Renesmee, we talked about her when she was a baby and an infant and how weird it was, but I do say that I did like how they made her into adult when Alice looked into her, the future with the four of them. That was the most believable of their CGI.
The flash forward,
The flash forward, yes.
I thought she was really disproportionate. She was like really skinny, but her head looked really big. But I mean,
well, that's just women just talking crap about each other. I mean, that's just, oh, she's just so disproportionate. Look at her face. And she's so fat.
She wasn't fat.
No, I know, but I'm just,
she looks a little weird. I mean, it's just me nitpicking, but I did like that scene though. I thought it was sweet to see, you know, like a happy ending for sure.
Mm-hmm.
For everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't give a shit what anyone looked like. Can we get back to the fact that everyone died?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's go to the...
Wait.
What I honestly loved was right after... Wait, is Laura on here?
I think you... Like, did we lose her?
Did we lose her again? Nice. Okay, well, since Laura's not on here, then I can talk about this. But I love the fact that right after the fight happened, like... Michael's Arrow was like, oh my god, no, that is not gonna happen. I have
that was actually really funny.
I am swamped with paperwork. I have way too much. I cannot die today. And then Caius is like, but they're doing this, how are you allowing? No, there's no danger, but they're with werewolves, our sworn enemy. No, there's no danger, we'll overlook this. It's fine.
Not werewolves.
Oh, I did like the fact that they overshadowed the fact that there's not werewolves there, that they're shapeshifters. Because I thought they should have just, who gives a crap if they're shapeshifters?
Mm-hmm. Right. It would have taken too much explanation.
Yeah. So they stayed werewolves in the movie.
Was it satisfying when you realized that it wasn't real?
No.
Yes.
Oh.
Well, my heart stopped racing. I was a little worried for a second.
Elisa, you were saying before we recorded that you were getting upset. Like, you felt really connected to these characters and you couldn't believe they were dying.
I was upset. To be honest with you, one of the things was when, I think it was Leah, right? When she died? Was that the one?
Well, Seth died first and then Leah died.
Yeah. Whichever one of those two, I couldn't quite tell at the time, but whichever one of those two fell in like the crack in the ground and you see them like falling, that's when I lost it. I was like, screw this. I can't handle this anymore. That's when I cracked. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe what got me most was really just Carlisle. And cause he was always probably my favorite of them all. He humanized vampires throughout the series. And when his head was just, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. That is not what I anticipated. But yeah, and then when it wasn't, there was this vision or whatever, I was mad at you guys. Cause you had all seen it before, and you didn't give me any forewarning. The first thing I did was get on my email, and I couldn't believe it. I felt betrayed. Not by the movie makers, but by you.
Okay, Elisa, do you really think that we would have just told you?
No, this is why we're getting.
This is why we're friends. We like to see each other suffer.
Well, I'm glad that the fandom as a whole kept it all a secret, because screening started in advance of the movie coming out, and there are plenty of fans who saw it. But Summit, I was speaking to somebody at Summit, and they said, "Yeah, we're really hoping everybody keeps it quiet." And I was like, "I don't think you actually have to worry about it, because since they don't actually die, I don't think anybody's going to be rushing to spoil this thing. Whereas if they did die, you can bet that was going to be all over Tumblr and stuff, because that would have been shocking. But I think they played it perfectly.
Yeah.
And truthfully, Andrew, you mentioned earlier in the show that you had the thought that, hey, maybe this could be a vision. Maybe this could be Alice's premonition. That maybe I'm just that mentally ill, but that didn't even occur to me.
Well, you know what?
That didn't.
I have to admit, I cheated because I heard that theory from somebody else. So, I heard it like a month. Did I? Didn't?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, I thought that was what was going to happen.
Yeah, but when have we talked about Breaking Dawn in the past year?
Well, it doesn't matter.
I know exactly who gave me the theory. And since that point, that's when I was like, oh, okay, so maybe that's what's going on. Because when you see the trailer, it's obvious a battle happens. But it didn't cross my mind, oh, it could be Alice's vision, until I heard this theory.
Well, Elisa when we talked to Stephanie Meyer during the luncheon, she did kind of give us a sort of hint about that happening. Elisa, do you remember that?
No, of course
you don't, because you were surprised when you saw this in your computer. When we were with Stephanie Meyer, she was saying like, yeah, Bill Condon, he just got hired. He has all these ideas about all these things that can happen, especially around the end. You don't remember that part, do you?
Oh, that's right. That's right. I do remember her saying that.
You guys knew all along.
Huh?
Now I'm mad at her.
she has said that her and Melissa Rosenberg kind of dreamed up the whole idea to begin with. So you can blame both of them for doing it, but they, like I said, they had to. Can you imagine this?
I kind of wish they did a little more. I mean, with the people, the only real like heartbreaking ones were the two Collins. I think they, they should have killed more.
Does anybody?
If they didn't actually die, we should have seen like, I don't know. I mean, Emmett, of course, would have died because he would get like really into the fight, but I kind of want to see like Esme get killed or Rosalie. Like the ones that you don't really think about too much in a fight.
I actually think it was more tragic that Carlisle died and Esme was still alive, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think they played that really well.
Well, that's like a literature. Oh, she has to go on the rest of her immortal life without her lover.
Well, it's tragic. It's sad. And then also, like, with like a lot of people aren't, I don't think like people are really huge fans of Jasper, but people love Alice. So to see the pain on Alice's face when Jasper gets his head ripped off, like that's, you know.
Yeah, no, I think
can we talk about Jane in that fight scene?
Oh my God.
I thought it was hilarious with Bella, like always just, well, we've been swearing a lot. When Bella keeps cock blocking Jane's powers, when she's like, oh, what? Oh, and then she turns and there's Bella just, to everybody. And then it makes sense that Jane can't fight because she never had to with her powers.
Of course.
She always had the power to give people like excruciating pain. So she never had to worry about fighting. And then when she realized, oh crap, I have no power here. She just runs. She flees from Alice. And then Alice is like, bitch, please.
Which is basically what, you know, Arrow does after seeing this.
Mm-hmm. Anybody can bring up other scenes if they want, but we can move on now to the soundtrack. What did you guys think of the soundtrack as a whole? Matt, you have always loved the Twilight soundtracks. Did you like this one?
I liked a couple of them. Honestly, I didn't really see much of the songs. Like, it was very score central, like all of it. And Carter Burrell, we've expressed early on in our episodes that we are not the biggest fan of his Twilight, but at the very end of Breaking Dawn Part 2, I really enjoyed it. I love Christina Perry's as Part 2 of A Thousand Years.
Yes.
With what's his face? I don't remember. I'm horrible with names, but
that was really cool.
The Part 2 version of that song was really nice, and that was the only song I've actually downloaded and listened to from the soundtrack. That and the last song of the film when, after the fight and Alice is looking through the future vision and everything. I thought that was a really nice song that they picked. Mm-hmm. I forgot what the song was because I can't find it on the soundtrack.
No, but the Christina Perry song, I thought it was so fitting. I think the lyrics say something like, where is it? Don't, darling, don't be afraid. I've loved you for 1,000 years. I'll love you for 1,000 more. And it was just so fitting for that last bit. And I don't know if you remember the Iron and Wine song from the first Twilight movie. For that forever, that song, like I always think of Twilight. And so I think, you know, same with this one. I'll always just think of Breaking Dawn. After.
There's always those one songs from each soundtrack that you just connect as a whole to the movie.
You know? I think something to consider with that last theme and that last song, just knowing myself and people who enjoy movies as standalone things and not just going back to the book and what have you. I think that had it not been for that trip off with the battle scene, I probably would have watched that and thought, this is very well done. It's very well shot, but this is so cheesy. I think we've spoken before about how the movies are very well done, but sometimes the amount of cheese and the amount of sap that they pour onto the scenes, in part, with all these really sappy, slow songs, it's just too much sometimes. It's just really too much, and it makes it unbelievable. And it's almost laughable. It's been laughable in a few instances. But what they did at the end, why I think it was such a stroke of genius, is that after you see what could have happened and the premonition, and after you're jarred out of that reality, you're begging for a scene like that. So afterwards, someone who's pretty cynical about these things, I saw that scene with them in the meadow and I just melted and I thought, this is wonderful.
Well, it was such a nod to the fans.
Wait.
Hold on.
You, Elisa Monfort, melted at the end of Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Thank God. All right, good.
I can totally see Elisa doing this, because I know exactly what she was doing, because this is exactly what she does when she sees something that's adorable. She crunches up into like almost a fetal position while she's sitting, and then she puts her hands together and claps together really fast like this.
Stop it!
That's how she was all through Lincoln when she saw that.
Yeah. Her arms were so tired after that movie.
Oh, I wish we were on Smart Mouse right now. I have so much to say.
I know. But since we're on that topic, what did you guys think about how they went about the scene of Bella giving Edward the ability to read her mind? I don't think it conveyed very well that it was Bella giving Edward the ability to read her mind.
I thought it did, because she introduces it saying... doesn't she say something like, look what I've learned how to do, check this out, something like that?
She says she wants to try something.
Yeah, and then she says something like, oh, now you know what I've seen, or like, now you know how I look at you, or
now
something
you know.
Like that. Now you know, yeah.
Now you know, no one has ever loved someone more than I love you.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm.
Ugh, whatever.
The reason I liked that montage is because I think that going into the first film, I was like, there's no way that they can transform Kristen Stewart convincingly to look so different from a human to a vampire. And so to just see that, all those little pieces from the different movies, they actually really, the transformation they did on her to make her a vampire really impressed me. So
did any of you notice during the montage that they did not show, because I noticed this after the second time I watched it, because I sort of thought about it the first time I saw it, but I was waiting for it in the second part. They did not show in that montage one single scene from Eclipse. They went immediately from movie one and movie two to movie four.
Huh.
They went from New Moon to Breaking Dawn. There was not one single scene. And people can argue with me, but I know for a fact they did not show a single scene from Eclipse.
Well, maybe they don't like David Slade. I don't know what to say about that.
I did hear that there was kind of some stuff that went on set, but I don't know if it was enough to like have some bad blood between them.
I mean, I was just, because the Eclipse ends with them in the meadow too, doesn't it? So I mean, maybe they didn't want to like repeat a scene.
But there was a whole movie before that.
Yeah, that's true.
Scene too.
I loved that ending that Matt's been talking about, because it was a multi-part ending. You had the battle, then you kind of had the wrap up, then you had Bella's vision, then you had that credits thing that we were talking about at the beginning of the show. I really loved how it was a half hour sort of ending. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It was a nice nod to the fans, really. Yeah. Like to go back and see all those and just kind of, you know, remember what you were doing at the time, I guess. It brought back a lot of memories for me.
I was contemplating whether I can go to my car or not.
What?
Why? Whether I should go to my car. Because
you were so sad. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, because you got to beat the crowd.
Oh my God.
Because I knew who was in all the movies. But it was really sweet.
Yeah, I did backpedal all you want.
It was really sweet and everything, but I need to get validated from parking.
Any other scenes before we move along here?
We didn't talk about Bella's trip to Seattle, which is, in my opinion, the most unnecessary scene in the book. And it really, I mean, I guess it kind of needed to be done.
I actually liked that scene in the book.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Oh, there you go.
I know.
Good for you.
Good for you. That's sweet. That's so sweet.
Your opinion matters.
How adorable for you.
Anything else? Anything else? Elisa, the lady who, any other scenes that you, what'd you say earlier? Swelled? Cried?
Swelled, cried.
What'd you say earlier?
I didn't say anything.
Melted.
Yeah, there we go. Well, we didn't talk about when Charlie saw Bella as a vampire for the first time. That whole scene when they had to tell her how to act like a human. I thought that was really cute. Like, don't blink, slouch, don't sit straight, because humans don't do that.
That was really adorable. Although, I mean, it's still really unrealistic to me that he would just kind of accept it, because I would still be asking questions.
Well, yeah, you would, but then, you know, you're not.
But then you Charlie's wouldn't be Charlie.
Yeah, then you wouldn't be Charlie there.
Charlie's very simple. I think he's just like, I don't need to know. It's like, I'm good.
I mean, he's seen a lot recently, so let's throw him a bone.
I can't remember any other particular moments.
A lot of fans were really looking forward to when Bella and Emmett did the arm wrestling scene.
Oh, yes. That was great. That was another scene I feel like wouldn't have been in if it weren't for the split.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't. Yeah. No, I completely agree. It would have been on the cutting room floor.
But it was one of the lighter moments that I really enjoyed. And it was kind of a montage, wasn't it?
Kind of. No, I don't know. I mean, how long of a scene that should have been?
Well, no. But wasn't there music set to it or something?
Yeah, there was some music set. It was kind of weird how they transitioned afterwards, because they went straight from her winning to her running by herself into the woods and finding a patch of light so she can shimmer.
Well, let's move on now to other Twilight talk that we have planned for today. Okay, so big question. Did Breaking Dawn have to be split into two? Elisa, you first.
No, it Ooh. Didn't have to.
Ooh.
No.
But, well, I mean, now that you've seen both films and, like, can you imagine it being one film, I guess?
Yes, I could. I think to have left it as one film would have been to appeal more to moviegoers. And I think that the idea of splitting up into two was more to appeal to the fundamental fan base, the people who read the book and have been there from the beginning. So I think ultimately most people are going to say that it was a good thing. I think it was a good thing because there are so many precious moments throughout there, whether it was, you know, the arm wrestling and what have you, that we would not have seen otherwise. So I'm glad that they split it into two. That doesn't mean that it wouldn't have worked as one. I think it absolutely would have worked as one, and I don't think that it was necessary, but I think that they made the right call. I think that we got to see a lot more of the story and of the characters than we would have otherwise.
Well said.
Yes, totally agree.
Let's just say Elisa's opinion is what we all think.
Adopt this. It's true.
Should this continue happening, though, these splitting a book into multiple films? We know that Hunger Games is going to do it. We know that The Hobbit is taking Tolkien's Hobbit and splitting it into three films.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. But at least there's other books that they're incorporating with the three split. They have this... I'm not even going to go into it, but
well, they have the footnotes or something.
They
right?
have supplement. Appendix. Yeah, they have a prequel to The Hobbit that they're going to incorporate apparently too. But that's neither here nor there. The fact is that does it really matter what we think?
No, they're just going to do gonna it anyway. Yeah,
it's a fad. It's just like 3D. It's like saying, does this movie need to be in 3D? Well, no, but of course they're going to do it anyways.
And it makes money, so yeah.
But the other movies that they're splitting into two, such as The Hunger Games, is completely based off the fact that these movies have been split into two, because that does not need to be split into two films at all. More than Breaking Dawn.
Or less than Breaking Dawn.
Well, literally, it's less than Breaking Dawn.
I mean, we all know why they do it, for the financial... reasons, but this is now the second time that we've seen this happen, and of course Harry Potter was the first time.
Harry Potter made sense,
and it worked, even though people said that part one was kind of slow, right?
Funny, I'm not the only one who thought that. I actually really love part one of Harry Potter.
And me too. I like it better than part two.
I honestly do. I honestly think that part one's better. But I think it's just the kind of person that you enjoy in films more than what you expect. Like if you expect action, then of course a lot of people like part two. But if you like dialogue, a story, you like the feeling of foreboding, a lot of people like part one. I know Laura does too. And Elisa, and I love part one, but that's for, you guys on MuggleCast. This is Twilight.
Yeah, get off our lawn. Well, let's talk about some news now. Of course, the big question was going to be, how would Part 2 do at the box office? It's the final Twilight film. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 made bank when it opened. Shockingly, it didn't do much better than Part 1. Part 1 made $138 million at the opening weekend box office. Part 2 made $141 million at the opening weekend box office. At the midnight box office opening, so the Friday night midnight screenings, the film only made about 200,000 more than Part 1, which is kind of a surprise because shouldn't it have been a stronger of an opening?
I feel like these box office discussions are always kind of a moot point because every movie that gets open is going to make more than a previous opening anyways. It's always the fact that this movie makes so much more money than the previous one, but we all know that all the subsequent films that get made are going to make more money anyways.
Mm.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's almost just like, well, we sort of have to talk about this, so we'll talk about it. But really, does it really matter how much the money makes or how much the film makes? Because
not at this point, at least.
How much a film makes doesn't really make it a better film.
Well, there should have been so much anticipation because it is the final film in the Twilight saga, and there's 5 films, 4 years. It's just like such a big deal. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2. I hate to keep comparing it to Harry Potter, but you have to look at it because that's the whole reason Summit wanted to split the film in the first place. Deathly Hallows Part 2 now holds the record for the midnight box office. I believe it's $43 million, which Part 1 doesn't even compare there. Harry Potter Deathly Hallows Part 1 doesn't even compare
to
that.
They got what they wanted. They got an extra $140 million.
I don't know if they suffered that much since they did make more, but I think the year gap kind of might have had an effect on that. I think it was too long.
I still do not understand that.
Well, Summit is obsessed with these November releases because now Mockingjay Part 1 and Part 2 are both going to be released exactly 1 year apart, November 2014 and November 2015.
Stupid.
Well, did Eclipse do worse or something in the box office? Because that was the only one that was released in the summertime.
New Moon was the franchise's peak.
Let
me look at the list here.
Because that was released in November. So if that, coming off of that, if they made less with Eclipse, it would just be really easy for them to be like, oh, well, let's shoot for November because we made so much money with
New
Moon.
But that's also the peak of the Twilight fan base time was that. That was when Breaking Dawn, the book, got released around the same year, and then New Moon got released. It was the peak. It was like you had to be a Twilight fan.
That's very true.
So it's all about the hype, like when the planets align together.
I just thought it should have been a bit more of a big bang, considering it is the final film in the saga. Well, of course,
there are so many more outlets now that you can watch the movies too. That probably didn't have a
quick question. Should Summit now, Summit Lionsgate? Lionsgate now owns Summit. Should Lionsgate say, oh, wait, we should move Mockingjay Part 2 up to the summer? Because obviously, a year apart is not good.
Yeah, I think so.
Was it you, Pamela, who said that they should be not a year apart?
No, I think that was Andrea.
Oh, maybe. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do think that they shouldn't be that much of a gap. But I mean, I also don't think they suffered that much. They still made a ton of money. So I don't.
I mean, a year is not that bad, though. I mean, compared to what we almost had to wait 2 years for the last Harry Potter because they moved it.
Yeah.
Or was it something like that? I mean, it could be worse.
But that's different, though. That's a full film. It's a full, complete film that we have to wait for. I don't mind waiting an extra year for a full and complete film.
Right.
But the fact is that we're waiting a full year for half of a movie.
Half a movie. That's
half
true.
Half of a story. I do not, I full heartedly disagree with the fact that you, that a viewer audience who is into this series has to wait a full 12 months to wait for the second half of a film that didn't
it's
even
not
need,
fair.
It didn't even need to be split into two anyways. Like throw at least, I mean, they're going to throw, they're, the viewers are going to pay you anyways. Let them at least remember the first half of the damn movie before yeah. they go see it again.
Exactly.
And well, maybe they don't want you to remember though, because then you'll pay to watch, you know, the marathon.
That's exactly what they're thinking. They want you to watch the first film and go see it while they do the two parts, which is, of course, is all about money. It ain't about the experience and all that crap. Don't even attempt to tell us that that's why.
Couple other quick stats. Midnight box office is overall. Twilight made 7 million. New Moon made 26.3 million. So a huge difference between those two. Eclipse made 30 million. Breaking Dawn Part 1 made 30.2 million and Breaking Dawn Part 2 made 30.4 million. So Breaking Dawn Part 2 still did have the biggest box office.
Nice.
By the way, there were Twilight Saga marathons happening across the country where fans got to see all five Twilight films back to back on release day. I don't think any of us did that, but man, is that some dedication.
Yeah, the theater that I was at had that going on. But then they also had... they had those 10 p.m. releases, yeah. I guess, that day. And we didn't know that. But apparently, a lot of people didn't know that. So what ended up happening was that they didn't sell out all the 10 p.m. tickets. So they started advertising it to the 1201 crowd to try and get them to switch tickets.
Well, that's pretty cool. That's
so
cool.
That they could sell more tickets for the midnight show.
Yeah. I really like the 10 p.m. showings because I bought a midnight release ticket like 2 hours before midnight because I forgot that it was the midnight release. Mm-hmm. And there were so many 10 p.m. showings that it was possible to buy a ticket.
Yeah. That's very true.
I think that's kind of a new thing that's happening, these 10 p.m. screenings. There was another film that did that recently. I'm forgetting offhand what movie it was, but that's fine by me. I mean, who wants to stay up till midnight to watch it? I mean, 10 p.m., that works for everybody.
I don't mind staying up till midnight.
Well, I don't mind staying up, but it depends on how long the movie is, because something like The Hobbit that's going to run 3 hours, like, I don't want to be awake at 3 a.m. when I have to go to work the next day.
That is happening for me.
I'm asking for the day off.
The judgment you all are doing, I am seeing that movie until 4 p.m.
I have already got my custom elf ears in the mail coming my way.
I am growing the hairs on my feet so they look like Hobbit.
Can I just remark how old we're all getting that we're complaining about this now? Like a few years ago, this was no problem.
Laura, I think I'm getting too old for midnight releases. Like, I was dead the day after.
Have some respect, Laura. Carlisle died.
I don't know if anybody's complaining. I mean, I was the one who sounded most like complaining, but I think it's great that there can be these 10 p.m. screenings because it is easier on, I think, anybody's schedule on the planet to go to a 10 p.m. screening instead of a midnight one.
Old people need to go to bed before 1 a.m.
No, that's not I'm not saying that.
I am. I just kind of feel like it should have been advertised more. Like, I didn't even know until I think that day, and it, only because I was listening to the radio and there was a radio spot for it.
Yeah.
And then I thought that they had messed up, so.
Yeah, that's great, though. I mean.
Let's talk favorite film of the series. We did a poll on Hypeable. That's hypeable.com. Which Twilight film is the best of the saga? And, the votes came in. Not many votes, actually. I was kind of disappointed in the turnout, but most people,
really?
50% said what? 50% said 50% said Breaking Dawn Part 2 was their favorite film. 20% said Twilight. 13% said New Moon. 12% said Eclipse. And 6% said Breaking Dawn Part 1.
Funny.
That's surprising.
Let's go around the table here. Matt, what's your favorite Twilight film?
Honestly, I think it's Eclipse is my favorite.
I would agree.
I think it's the most well-rounded film
mm-hmm.
of all of them. First of all, it's one part, which is a great plus. I'm really happy that Summit did that. They really listened to the fans with that one, and they decided to make into a one film because it needed to be. And it, you know, it had a beginning, middle, and end. It had a climax. It just had everything. All it didn't have was the fact that Bella was still human at the end. I thought my opinion is Eclipse in the book and the film is the best rounded film as a film in the series.
Pamela, how about you?
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree. I think the pacing was the best in that one. That's still the one in the franchise that I can catch on TV or watch, you know, just randomly. And it's, I'm not bored. I don't feel like I'm tuning out. You know, mm-hmm. I just think that everything they did with that worked really well. But I think Breaking Down Part 2 actually would give it a run for its money, because that one was very well done as well.
Andrea?
I hate to do it, but yeah, I think Eclipse is also my favorite, mostly because it was my favorite book. But Part 2, I mean, I got the best reaction. Like, I was truly, you know, engaged. So it's between the two of those.
Laura, how about you?
I'm going to just go ahead and go with Part 2, because it just really knocked me off my feet.
Literally. That's why we couldn't hear you for a while. You were on
the
ground.
I was still so shocked. No, seriously, actually very, very surprised by how they pulled that off. It was really, really cool.
Good.
And Elisa.
I think, God, so mainstream. I was going to say Eclipse as well. I feel like Eclipse for me was the movie that turned the series from being a rather, you know, a little on the childish side to more mature. That was the turning point. In the movies. That being said, I might have to go with Breaking Dawn Part 2 overall just for that last scene. It really took me by surprise. It really took my breath away. And I think it was very ballsy. It was very risky to do something like that, to such a well-loved series.
Right.
Yeah. You know, kudos to them. I mean, that really blew me away. I can't believe everyone died.
I know.
I honestly, though, the best scene in the saga was the fight sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even in the book.
It needed to be.
Everyone needed to die.
Well, Stephanie Meyer was asked this on the red carpet, Breaking Dawn red carpet. What is her favorite Twilight film? And I was surprised by this. You know, as somebody who is trying to sell Breaking Dawn Part 2, that's why she's on the red carpet. She should be trying to push this film. And I thought for sure she would say Breaking Dawn Part 2, but she actually said her favorite film is New Moon. And I just,
really?
Yeah.
I think she honestly does that.
Jacob
because
she's a Jacob
fangirl. Well, props to her for being honest.
Right. She does. She's probably just like playing like damage control, because it's not the most loved of the series of the films. So she's trying to be like, oh, no, it's my favorite book in the film. Like what J.K. Rowling does with Hufflepuff. It's actually my favorite house. So y'all can stop hating on Hufflepuff.
Well, Stephanie Meyer said this about New Moon. It's not my favorite of the books. It is when I'm in the dark mood. But something about the movie just speaks to me. I thought it was really beautifully done. So that she didn't offer any more analysis than that, but she likes the dark side of it. And I have to say, that is pretty good. I was actually just thinking the other day about how, you know, there's three or four pages in the book where you turn the pages and it's just chapter, or it's just month after month. You know, it's just March, and then you change the page, it says April and then May. I thought that was really funny. Okay, well, enough about that. Okay, here's a controversial topic. A Twilight spinoff. Now, before you say, oh, what are you talking about? That's nonsense. Well, there's been rumors about it for a while that Summit is considering doing a Twilight spinoff. And it just seems to be at that point where it's like, they got to be, right? Because it's a moneymaker for them. The Twilight saga is a money machine.
Just let it die.
So then I thought was interesting on her official Facebook page, Melissa Rosenberg, who has written all five films, she did this poll saying if there were a spinoff book about any of the other vampire clans, who would you want it to be about? And she lists a variety of nomads and covens. And I asked her about this on the red carpet as well. And she was like, oh, you know, I was just curious. But then, like, her answer was she would like to see a film about the girl wolf, escaping my name.
Leah.
Leah. She thought that would be her pick for a spinoff story. Now, first of all, what do you guys think of a spinoff? I mean, should it be happening or no? Like, what is that?
No.
Why? Let's also assume, and I think it's safe to say that any spinoff that happens, Bella, Edward, and Jacob's story will be over at this point.
Yeah, it is over. But also, I don't think that a spinoff series should be okayed or put forward without the input from the creator. And we know that Stephanie Meyer doesn't want to write about that world anymore.
Didn't Stephanie Meyer once kind of mention writing about Leah, though? Or am I making that up?
No, I don't think you are. I think, like, right after she finished Bree Tanner, she mentioned something like that.
Yeah.
Like, if she were to do another novella, she would pick Leah, which I actually agree with. I think it'd be cool if they picked anyone to have it be Leah. But I'd like to see her story from the beginning, because she's kind of one of those tragic characters. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm saying that they should do it, because I think it would be kind of beating a dead horse with a stick. But, I mean, if they were doing it on anyone, it'd mm-hmm. probably be more interesting coming from her.
Just call me a sucker for just when a series is done, stop it. Make it end on a good note instead of
You don't want to jump the shark.
You don't want to keep going until no one wants to hear about it anymore.
Well, I'm not even sure how people would be interested in that kind of story. I mean, people love the movies for Edward and Jacob and Bella. I mean, like, how is a Leah spinoff going to work unless you cast hot guys and, like, you somehow really get the Twilight fans connected?
I mean, we already
connected.
Know what happens. We know the gist of Leah's story. Why would we want... I mean, it's almost like having them write... Or make a film of Midnight Sun. Yeah. All they're doing is changing the camera angles.
I mean, hell, I would take a Midnight Sun movie over something else. Over, like, a Leah thing.
Well, let's work on finishing that book first.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing a Brie Tanner short film.
Yeah.
Or a miniseries. That might work.
Ooh, I mean, let's...
made for TV miniseries.
Baby steps.
That was actually one of the rumors, is that it would be the spinoff, whatever it focuses on, would be on TV. And, you know, I think that's an interesting idea, because you look at the popularity of Teen Wolf on MTV. Mm-hmm. I mean, that show has been a runaway hit, so that could potentially work really well. And the funniest part about that is that MTV only recreated Teen Wolf, which was a TV show to begin with, like 20 years ago.
It was a movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a movie.
They only brought it back to life because, if you ask me, the popularity of the wolves in Twilight or the shapeshifters. Right?
I just think it's interesting that Melissa Rosenberg just automatically gravitates towards Leah, because I kind of feel like that would be the safe bet, considering that Teen Wolf is so popular right now. I mean, that would be the safe way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, vampires are kind of, well, I don't know if they're on their way out, because there are a couple other vampire shows in the mix, but to focus on a werewolf storyline when Teen Wolf is mm-hmm. so popular right now would be a very smart move if they were to do it.
Yeah. I feel like even werewolves are a little slowly going on the out, because right now it's all about zombies.
That's
very true.
Well, there is that new one coming out in spring called
Warm Bodies.
Yeah, and I did Summit was screening it for all the Twilight campers, and I went to it, and I've heard the book is really good. I don't think the general consensus in the theater was that the film does not live up to the book. They changed some things.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Because the book is phenomenal. I read it in a night. Like,
really? Yeah, I've heard really good things about it. So,
yeah, it looks really cheesy.
It's like, yeah, it is. But they play into that, and like, there's a scene like in a meadow. Like, like everybody was laughing so hard because it was so Edward and Bella. Like, they're trying a little too hard to make it Twilight-ish. But whatever. If you read the book, you got to go see the film. How could you not? So it'll probably still do pretty well. And then, of course, since we're talking about where the Twilight fandom goes from here, there's always the question of new books from Stephanie Meyer. She has made it clear that Edward, Jacob, and Bella's story is complete. But, you know, at this point, guys, do you ever see Midnight Sun happening? I know we ask it every episode, but the last time we asked it was a year ago.
I mean,
I really doubt it.
Let's just let her be.
Are we ready to let go of the Midnight Sun idea?
I never read it.
It's actually pretty good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
That's nice.
At least the, like, a few chapters that were released, yeah.
Hmm. I would still like to see it. I wouldn't... I don't know. It's, I guess, because she took it off the website, right? So
no, but, it's up for people to read.
Okay.
Because it got leaked, so then she was like, well, why not?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's that. We'll skip this little area in here, I think, unless anybody really wants to talk about it. Any calls for it?
Let me see. No.
Okay. So to wrap up the show, since this is the final imprint, does anybody have any favorite imprint moments?
Well, I mean, why don't we just discuss highlights of the show?
Okay, you start us off.
Well, the beginning of the show.
Well, we started the website and the podcast because some of us had been involved with MuggleNet, the Harry Potter website, and we wanted to do a site that was kind of like a MuggleNet of the Twilight realm. I got into the Twilight books, and Matt kind of did as well, because we were over...
We bought the first book together.
Yeah. And it was nice because the thing about Twilight, between you and I, and also Lauren and Elisa, to some extent, it was kind of like our thing.
Yeah. I mean, everyone was talking about, like, we should read it. So we were like, yeah, of course we're going to read it. Why not? Everyone's telling us to, so we'll do it.
I remember when you guys were over at my house and you were looking at the books on my bookshelves. And I remember Andrew said, yeah, I've heard good things about these books. How are they? And I was like, yeah, they're pretty good. You should read them, whatever. And God, little did I know, 3 years later, I was going to be sitting here with you guys.
You know, it's funny. I still remember sitting on your bed reading the first one.
Yeah. I do remember that was the night that we did a video. I think it was a Pickle Pack video. God, was it? Oh, whatever. A video introducing the newest host of MuggleCast, which was Elisa Monfort. It was that same night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the same night that we introduced Elisa to our world.
Our world.
That was fun. That was the same night that I fell down your stairs and broke your banister.
That's right.
I think that was also the night that Lauren and Elisa heard noises that ended up coming from the vacuum cleaner.
I thought someone was having sex in my bed and it ended up being the Roomba. The automatic vacuum cleaner got stuck between the bathtub and it was just like clean against the wall.
Of all times for it to do that.
I was pretty excited, to be honest with you.
Let's see. I think we talked about this a little bit in the very beginning, but Laura was the only one who wasn't really sold on the name of the podcast imprint.
Oh yeah, that's right. I thought it was crap at the beginning.
It was Matt's idea, the imprint name.
It was my idea, Laura. What's up?
Sorry. What did I want? What was the one I wanted?
Twilight Podcast.
No, that's not.
you were like Flycast.
You were like Sparkle Cast or something. Something stupid.
Well, way to move away from the cast endings.
I think we had talked about doing Bitten as well.
That's
right.
No, but I think the fact that Bitten was already taken. I think that was the thing.
Okay.
And we were contemplating if we wanted to just forget that it was already taken and do something. But... when we released the first episode, it was one of the top podcasts on iTunes. It was like one of the top 10. It was like number 5 at one point.
Yeah. It was exciting.
Yeah. And, we also did, a live show that actually got, or was that Smart Mouse that trended? Did Imprint trend on Twitter?
I think that was a MuggleCast thing.
That was a MuggleCast thing. Okay.
What's Smart Mouse?
Oh, I no.
I mean, I remember
the highlights. Oh, Bella Stove is on. We did the IMDb Bella Stove.
Oh,
that was a big thing.
Yeah.
And Andrew and I did covers of some songs from the Twilight soundtrack. We did Love Bug and Madonna's Like a Virgin.
Right. Actually, I'm looking at our Twitter responses now, and Ryan suggested that Matt and Andrew singing Jonas Brothers.
Which one of you guys did the Adam Lambert song? One of you guys did an Adam Lambert song, didn't you?
I can't say I remember
yeah,
that
I think,
one.
I think Matt did.
Oh, yeah, that was
oh,
your
yeah,
song.
That,
oh,
that was me. Because that song comes on the radio, and I still can't take it seriously.
What version? What song?
Who was it that...
What do you want from me?
That's the one. What do you want
from me? Yeah. Oh, I remember that. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that song comes on the radio every once in a while, and I laugh, and I can't. I have to change the station.
I'm a sexy beast. What can I say? Well, the Twilight Tour we got to talk about, but is that, I mean, was there anything in between that?
I was going to say, the Imprint Tour was not just a highlight of the show, I think, but a highlight of, this is so pathetic, but in all seriousness, the highlight of my life.
Yeah, me too. I would say it's definitely one of the highlights of our entire lives.
Mm-hmm. That was
going on that tour.
Oh my God.
So much fun. And
it was.
We didn't care about you, Laura.
No. I just forgot which one we're working on right now. I just almost said a really bad word.
Well, it worked out really nicely because
seriously, anytime I think about that trip, like the only memory I have is Matt trying to make us eat chocolate covered bacon.
The chocolate bacon.
Yeah, I bought chocolate bacon in Seattle, and it lasted the entire trip. And the entire trip, all I kept saying was, "We're gonna eat this chocolate bacon.
We're gonna eat this, guys.
We're gonna eat this." And then when the tour was over, I busted out the chocolate bacon. It was like, all right, we're going to be eating this.
We have video.
And we almost vomited eating it.
There's video of us like vomiting all over the hotel room. It's gross.
What I was going to say, and this, I got on this if this had ever actually happened, but speaking of video, during the imprint tour, Matt and I recorded a scene from Twilight where Edward reveals that he is a vampire. We did kind of like a spoof
we
on
did
that
do that. Andrew, you have that footage, don't you?
Yeah, it was before our first podcast, and I think we were all a little bit, well, I mean, I was a bit nervous, you know, about doing the first podcast of the tour.
Oh my God, I totally forgot about this.
And we were in this small wooded area behind the behind the bookstore.
It was before our Seattle show.
Yeah.
And yeah, go ahead.
And
we should release that. We really should.
Yeah, we should.
But we did pictures too. At least throw a screen cap. Make it the album art. Mm-hmm. It was so good. Elisa really portrayed Bella really well.
I remember I thought, the only thing I have to do is just blink a lot
and breathe.
This will be really great.
And stutter.
The entire time, all you heard was Elisa going.
We took a few different shots of it. Andrew actually, I mean, you actually got pretty good with the angles. You were matching that up.
The cinematography was astounding.
I was the Catherine Hardwick of that production.
You were. And we got Industrial Light and Magic to do the special effects on the glitter. It was really well done. It was tastefully done.
Well, we haven't edited it, but I should try to dig that up.
Yeah, put it on YouTube or something.
That'd be good. Yeah. But the tour in general worked out really well because we also got, you know, Pamela and Andrea came to shows as well, which was worked out.
We just showed up.
We're like, you know, oh, I mean, God, I guess they have to be on the show now.
Damn it. I was trying to call their bluff.
All right. Borders, do we have? Oh, and Borders when they existed.
Yeah, that was back in the day.
That's so sad.
No, that tour, like Elisa said, I was going to say it if you weren't going to. It was honestly one of the best times of our lives. It's fair to say.
It really was. And thank you to everyone who came out to that show because it really meant a lot to us.
Yeah, and supported through donations because it would not have been possible without those donations that we
at all. We wouldn't have done it at all.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we may have, but it's
no
still,
way,
I mean, it
would not
have happened
without them.
It was really nice seeing everyone who actually listened to us.
And we got into a really good vibe with it where we were doing basically the same show every city, but we were mixing it up. I remember we mixed up like the main discussion, but the beginning and the end, I think the beginning was always the same. The middle, we had a different main discussion. Then the end was general Q&A.
My favorite of the shows was not even during the show. It was always afterwards when we got to talk
to everybody.
Getting to talk to people and like, I don't know, people just came up and told us so many cool stories about like how they had gotten into it. And we had a lot of people who were fans of the other shows who showed up too. Mm-hmm.
It was really
nice.
So
it was really cool to get to meet all of them.
Because, I mean, a lot of them had things that they wanted to ask us.
Yeah.
Like, it was just everyone had, it was just really gratifying to know that, like, these people actually cared about what we thought about. When they wanted to, they all waited with something they wanted to say, whether it was something that we said in this show or another show or just about us in general. It was just, it was really nice.
Yeah. I remember some really nice people after, I remember one person in one of the parking lots came up to Matt, Elisa, and I and like really opened up, which people had done on.
I remember her.
Yeah. And that was really sweet.
Yeah, you did.
No, but she really opened up, and it's really nice how people connect to the podcast and really enjoy the podcast and get something out of it other than our dumb comments on Edward and Bella.
Well, since we're on the topic of the tour, why don't the six of us, geez, how many of us are there in here? Well, I know what Pamela and Andrea's favorite stop was. But what were our favorite stops?
I think mine actually, well, it was probably, sorry, Pam, it was Andrea's stop in Texas.
Jeez, tell me how you really feel.
Because crowds, I remember that had the biggest audience. And when we went upstairs.
I thought New York was the biggest audience.
That may have been, they may have been about tied.
New York was huge.
But, well, I was just really surprised by the Texas audience. We didn't know how many people were going to really show up.
No, you're right. No, that was a big surprise.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's bigger in Texas, but.
True. And our friends Callie and Cassie came out as well from Twilight Series.
Elisa, do you remember the fountain outside the Texas show?
I do.
There was a fountain outside Borders that I was drawn. I don't know why. I was mesmerized. This is totally random.
It's staring at thing. I want to drink off of that thing. I'm like, Matt, we have to go do the show now. I just really want to take a drink.
What? I was tired.
I remember. I think I get some of them confused. Because we were basically at Olive Garden, Dunkin' Donuts for every single city,
Subway was the thing. Subway, I mean, God, the carbs that
There was one stop, I think it might have been San Francisco, I don't recall, but there was one stop where after the show, these two guys came up to me, and I can't remember what their question was, but they had some question for me that was related to something that happened in the last movie. And I jumped on it really, really fast. Like, oh,
San Francisco.
God, no.
It was San Francisco.
Was that San Francisco?
Yeah, it was San Francisco.
As soon as I start talking, they were so awesome. As soon as I start talking, they literally, these are grown men. These weren't like 12-year-old boys. These were like 21-year-old men. They grab each other and they look at each other. And one of them turns to the other and says, I knew it. I knew she would be like this. Oh my God.
No, it's true. I was there when I saw it. It's exactly what happened. They were trying to get a rise out of Elisa to go on a rant. And they said something about the toilet, and she was like, oh my God, oh my God. Yeah, and then they both grabbed each other, like holding each other, like, oh my God, here she goes. I told you she would do this. Here she goes. Here she goes.
Yeah.
They probably carefully crafted that question.
Yeah.
Just yeah. So
okay, we have to mention this, but we can't mention that until we say this first. Okay.
Well, let's be honest. As a group, we do that to Elisa all the time. It's pretty fun.
Right.
Yeah. We say something. I'll get her on a rant so we can check our phones.
It was funny to me because they were like, like I said, they were grown men. They were wearing like backwards baseball caps. They had tattoos and like whatever it was. I'm like, oh my gosh, it was awesome. They were really cool guys.
Well, so Elisa, what would you say was your favorite stop on the tour?
Oh my God. I'm choosing three. It's either San Francisco, Texas, or New York. Those three stood out. So, you know what? The Orlando one was fun as well because we had a lot of crossover from the other shows due to the fact that we were in Orlando also for the Harry Potter conference. So that was fun getting a mix of the fans there too.
Okay. Laura?
Are we talking just about shows or are we talking about experiences in these cities?
No, we're talking about shows.
Just the show. Okay.
Yeah, whatever.
I would have to say for me, it would be probably a tie between New York and Orlando, just because, I mean, I just remember those both being really fun. But if I have to pick based on experience, I remember Cleveland was so bizarre.
Oh my God.
Like, I've never, it was, I'm sorry to anybody who lives in Cleveland, but like, it was such a bizarre place.
What are you talking about?
I know what Laura's talking about, and it was a very, I mean, everybody who went was awesome, but it was almost like they cared too much about our personal lives.
Oh yeah, that's true. But I'm not talking about that specifically. I'm talking about like, like everybody hated their lives. Like, I don't know.
The lady at Olive Garden hated her life. She told us. We went to Olive Garden right afterwards and we were like, so how are you doing? I hate my job. I hate living here. I just hate it.
That's a shame.
And we were like, so can we get our sangrias, please? Right.
So how about that endless bread bowl?
So those breadsticks coming up soon.
And then you remember when those people recognized us driving back to the hotel? We were like, on the highway.
Yes. That was weird.
We were on the highway. We looked to our left, and there are these girls in this truck to our left, and they're pointing and screaming. And then, like, we look over and I kind of look at them, and they wouldn't look at us again, but they were still, like, laughing. It was funny.
It was when we were listening to Spice Girls, too. And then, we were really tired. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's, Matt and the bird.
Yeah.
A bird?
The bird story. Yeah. When
I wasn't there.
We were taking you home.
In
Cleveland.
Yeah,
and I was asleep, and I woke up in the terminal while we were dropping you off. I just woke up, and I saw these birds in the distance on a trip, on a phone line. And I was like, what are all these birds doing here? They're going to kill us.
But he was still half dreaming, and he was afraid of the birds.
That's funny.
Then we let him drive.
Yeah, we did, and that was a dumb idea.
I could have killed all of you that night, because like, I drove the overnight, and that was
yeah,
really
the overnight
rough.
Drives were crazy. And I know Elisa, when I did my overnight, I drove for like 18 hours or something like that. It was really long because
Seattle to Portland or something like that.
No, it was Nashville to Tennessee or something, whatever. But Elisa promised that she was going to stay awake with me, and she the bitch fell asleep.
Until like 4 a.m.
We talked about Coldplay for 1 hour. You fell asleep, and I was left listening to The Scientist by Coldplay, about to fall asleep.
Oh God,
that's not true.
But for me, my favorite show was it's a cross between Seattle and Chicago, mainly because of the shows themselves. I think that my favorite show was Chicago. Mainly because of the interaction we had with the audience. It was a lot of the things we talked about were really profound. I know it's not even on our feed because we lost it, but all the people that came out,
trust us,
it got lost. Sorry, but like the people that came out to ask questions about. I mean, I really felt like we were connecting with the audience a lot.
Cool. Good to hear.
And also, we almost got killed by a tornado.
Well, this has been a very long episode. I think we're about done here, yeah?
Yeah, I think we're about done. What's next?
Well, actually, speaking of what's next, we should plug a couple other things. Some of us do some other podcasts.
Some of us don't.
Hey, you're welcome to. You're welcome to, buddy. Andrea, you're gonna hit me, but you don't regularly do any podcasts on Hypeable, right?
I'm doing Smash Chat now.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So for people watching,
Smash has a show?
Yeah.
A podcast for Smash?
Yeah.
Yes.
I am Smash a Smasher.
Chat. You should be on.
So yeah, I mean, if you are looking to get into maybe some other podcasts that some of us are involved with, I'm still involved with MuggleCast, and Andrea does Smash Chat. Pamela does Talks of Camelot, which is a Merlin podcast, which now is set to end in December.
But I mean, I don't know if we've been getting some comments about it. We might go back and do just kind of like a recast of past seasons, but we're still going to think about it.
Oh, okay.
For those you don't know, Merlin is ending after the next, I think, 5 episodes. So this is going to be its last season. But if you're a fan, come hang out. We have a lot of fun on there. And we'd love to have you.
Nice.
Well, you can keep, I think the best way to do this is just to plug Hypeable. No. just to follow us all on Twitter. Matt is twitter.com/MattBritton. I am Sims, S-I-M-S. We have, Laura's private. Never mind. You could just forget about her for the rest of eternity.
Laura's done. Forget her. She's gone.
No. We all love Laura.
We do.
Elisa, kind of. If you want people to follow you, what is your Twitter handle?
Oh my God. I don't know. Just find me under Matt's followers or something.
Just follow Matt or Andrew.
Yeah, we'll retweet when she has something interesting to say.
Yeah, just follow Andrew and you'll find me eventually. You'll be fine.
Can I say yours or is that your...
No, it's fine. It's Elysium, and it's Elysium underscore Ann. So it's E-L-Y-S. I-U-M_ANNE.
Just follow Matt Britton or at Sims.
Yeah,
it's easier.
Matt Britton and at Sims. They're fine.
And then
I never say anything.
And then we have Pam and Andrea, twitter.com/AndreaSalazar. Is that yours? 19?
A Salazar 19.
You know what? And then Pamela's is what? Pamela Gogobachi?
Yeah, at Pamela Gogobachi. Okay, well, have fun spelling that one.
I'm just going to put links in the show notes.
That's nice.
Because that'll just be easy.
We should at least say goodbyes. Like each of us say goodbyes to our imprint listeners.
Okay, that sounds nice. We've actually never formally ended a podcast before. So this is new.
I mean, we can't be any more formally ending than this.
Okay. Go ahead. Matt, what is your final message to the imprint listeners?
I'm going to go first. Fuck.
It's your idea.
Okay, to all of our imprint Spider Monkey listeners, I say farewell. Thank you so much for listening to us this long 3 years, 3 or 4 years, even though we haven't been a year, but I just want to say thank you for listening to our podcast. Thank you for reading the books. And if I have to say anything about what you want to read, just it doesn't matter if a book is too popular to where you see as becoming a conformist if you read it or not, or if it's so ridiculed that you are often made fun of about what you read. Just forget what others depict you as when you want to read a book. And just, if you want to read something, it's better than not reading at all. Honestly. So.
Oh, that's really nice.
If you want to read a series, go ahead and read it. Forget what other people say. Because it's your choice to have an imagination. And not many people have it these days. I was trying to be philosophical.
I think Matt really means what he said.
I honestly mean what I say because, I mean, let's be honest. This is Twilight. And a lot of people make fun of people who read Twilight.
Right.
And it shouldn't matter what other people think and how they perceive us.
Do you want to know what I think right now?
What?
No, I'm kidding. I do agree with you. That was very, Dr. Phil. I appreciate that.
Thoughtful Phil. Thank you.
Laura, before your connection drops again, what do you have to say to everybody?
Well, I mean, I would just like to echo what Matt said. You know, I always really appreciate, all the support and everything that we've done throughout the years. It's always really, really incredible to, hear from people from all parts of the world. So definitely huge thanks for that. And to you guys, I just want to say, you guys are jerks letting me go through half the show thinking that everyone dies.
Oh, did you watch the film?
Well, yeah, because here's what happened. So while I was booted from the call, I was like, I guess I could just watch the rest of the movie while I wait to be able to get back on. And then I was like, you gotta be freaking kidding me. What a cop out. This is some BS.
So, we were purposely fooling you and we talked about it while you were disconnected.
Here's the funny thing. Like, as soon as I watched it, I was like, oh my God, those bastards. I know exactly what they're doing.
Well, all right. So are you disappointed now? Do you wish they all actually died?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're all like, yeah.
Andrea, what is your message to everybody?
Oh, boy.
Mine won't be as profound. No, I just want to thank everyone for listening, for just being so supportive and being so kind to us. I mean, especially, I can't talk for Pam, but, you know, we came into the group and we weren't really sure how people would react to us, and everyone's been so nice. So we've just had a great time. And thanks to you guys for, you know, having us on the show, or having me on the show. I won't talk for Pam, like I said.
Thank you for having us on the show. Me and my wifey.
And Andrea, go ahead now. You can speak for Pam.
Pam? Yes, what?
Did you like the series?
Oh, did I? I'm saying thank you. No, I guess I'm echoing what Andrea said. I mean, like, anytime you go into something that is as popular as pretty much anything Andrew touches, it's kind of like really nerve wracking. And so we really appreciate
that truer words have never been spoken. Thank you.
No, but I'm serious. God. I mean, like, coming into a show and knowing how many listeners it has and knowing you're replacing Laura, who's awesome, is just so nerve-wracking, you know? Oh. So I just really appreciate everybody being so supportive. And thank you guys for having me on for, you know, half the show's duration. That's I don't know why you picked me, but I really appreciate being on here.
Well,
it was fun to
considering
talk
the two people who vouched for you, you didn't even mention. Elisa and I did put your name into the pool.
Did you? We'll have to see email records. No, but Andrea and Pamela were really involved. You two were really involved with Twilight Source, and we thought, well, you guys seem really cool, and I think you had been working with Elisa a lot, and so we thought.
And thanks to Matt and Elisa for vouching for me.
I remember that happening. I remember us saying, okay, we need someone to replace Laura. Who should it be? And our first two thoughts were Andrea and Pam. And we're like, oh my God, there's no way we can choose. All right, fuck you. Screw it. Let's do this.
Let's just do both of them.
Let's just do this.
Well, it's been such a trip, and it's been really fun getting to know you guys on the show and outside of the show. So,
yeah.
Thanks for
definitely.
That.
Definitely. We've all made new friends through the show. Lisa, how about you?
Well, in all seriousness, I guess I would just reiterate some of what Matt was saying. I urge everyone to keep reading, in all seriousness. I know there are a lot of listeners who never before Twilight would have thought a story about a sparkling vampire would have intrigued them so much. And now look at you. You're listening to a podcast. So it's, let that be a lesson to you that there is surprises in every book, and that literature can really take you by surprise. And don't give up on it now. Don't stop reading after this one series. And I know that speaking personally, there have been parts of the series, both in the books and in the movies, that have been inspiring. There have been parts that have been cheesy and crap. But throughout all of it, the one thing that has not disappointed me once has been the listeners. Had it not been for you guys, we would not have gone on the tour. We would not have been able to do this show. And so many opportunities that have opened up to us along the way would not have been possible. So thank you guys for being the most consistent part about Twilight.
Well said.
And I echo everybody's statements. And I just want to say thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to all the hosts here on the show for going through with the podcast over the years. I know one of the reasons I enjoyed doing Imprint from the get-go was that it was refreshing to stop talking about Harry Potter and actually talk about something else for once on a podcast. So that for that reason, Imprint's always been really fun to talk about something other than one subject. So
what are we going to talk about now?
Hunger Games, Divergence, you know, so who knows? Who knows what else, Matt? Who knows what's next? Where is the next Twilight? That'll be the topic of next week. Oh, wait.
Oh, no.
Oh, ow.
Ow, too soon.
No, but seriously, thank you to everybody. I mean, obviously, we're ending Imprint, but we're all still around in some capacity online, so you can keep up with all of us. And who knows, maybe we will all be reunited one day by another book series.
One can only hope.
So thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Matt Britton. Come on, guys.
I'm Elisa Montfort.
Oh, no, I should go last because I'm like the deserter. So.
I shouldn't even
be able to say my name.
Because you're the original four.
All right, should we
Oh, dear. Okay. I'm Laura Thompson.
No. Laura, say your name.
What?
Say it nicely.
Okay. I'm Laura Thompson.
Very good.
I'm Pamela Gokapachi.
And I'm Andrea Salazar.
And we'll see you next time.
Wait. Oh, no.
No, we won't.
Okay. Oh. Well, hey, Ed, we will see you down the road. Goodbye.
Farewell.
Bye.
Bye.
I have literally made out with every single person on this panel.